Hello and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in online and having technical issues, remember that you can listen to the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. To those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, welcome, and thank you so much for tuning in. This is our 31st episode of On Sacred Ground, broadcasting live at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on this February 3rd, 2016. In this episode, we'll be discussing the power of story, both in our personal lives and in the world at large. And it is a call-in show, so if you have any questions or comments or would like to share some of your own stories or ideas on the topic, please do call in at 657-383-0525. We'd be completely happy to have you. Before we get to the topic, we're going to be starting, as we do every episode, with an excerpt from the book Earth Prayers from Around the World, 365 Prayers, Poems, and Invocations for Honoring the Earth. And what I was brought to actually is an anonymous poem invocation here. And what it reads is this. Where I sit is holy. Holy is the ground. Forest, mountain, river. Listen to the sound. Great spirits circle all around. I love that I was brought to that poem. It's funny because I had a different one on the same page picked. But then when I picked up the book, I just got this note. It's this one. And I look at it, and as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, oh, that's really great, because that really falls right into today's topic, which organizing today's topic, I had so much to say on this subject of stories. Organizing it wasn't easy, so we'll definitely be filling some of today's topic into the next episode. But both of these episodes are kind of talking about the idea of stories as medicine. Stories as medicine, as maps, and mirrors. I always find the idea of modalities very interesting. And by modalities, I mean the ways in which people treat issues and conditions. Conditions is a word that we use in hoodoo. In hoodoo, African American folk magic, it is a modality that makes a strong use of candle magic and prayer and bath and working with plants. These kinds of applications are a part of that modality. And it's a very effective, excellent, beautiful modality. And then there's another modality that I know of that is, I mean, of course, I know tons of modalities, but another one that a lot of people have heard of is Reiki. Reiki being a modality that's about hands-on healing. Hands-on healing, it comes from Japan, and it's sort of the channeling of a sort of universal love, universal healing energy, universal vitality energy into the body. And obviously, there are so many other modalities. There are the modalities that come with naturopathy and Western herbalism and acupuncture and affirmations and new thought thinking. And many people, they might not realize it, but because we live in such a diverse world, many people straddle more than one modality without even realizing it, that, you know, they have more than one modality or treatment system as a healer, or a spirit worker, as a part of their toolbox that they're working with, and they're pulling out of that toolbox together, you know, because they're one person. Story is not something I expect to be a part of my modalities, one of my modalities. In fact, I thought it was a very vague modality. Now, I grew up always fascinated by the idea of mythologies, always fascinated by the idea of stories, always loving stories, loving movies, loving plays, but never thinking about the idea of story as a foundational modality. In fact, story as one of the earliest modalities that we have and humanity. That stories themselves are medicine, maps, and mirrors. That a story can heal, a story can break a person, an event, a community. So when stories entered my life and I was met with some challenges, and the answer wasn't, well, light these three candles, do these rituals, and then move on. The answer, or go on a journey, find this out from a helping spirit, and then move on. It was change a story. It was daunting. It was very daunting because I would say that probably for us in the West, most of us don't know a darn thing about changing a story. Most of us don't even realize that we are living stories. So when a healer that I had gone to some years ago said, it's going to be the modality of story that's going to get you out of this situation, and it's vital for you to recognize the power of your own stories as a storyteller, I thought, oh man, because one of the things that scared me about that was I never liked the one of my biggest fears has always been having to be hyper aware of anything. Because what if you make a mistake? What if you falter? What if you stop thinking about the thing? Which is a false story, because the idea is that when you take on something new, when you become something new, when you make that shift from, say, a place of crossed conditions to a place of positive conditions, then it should be a full shift, not just a mental shift. It should be a whole body, a whole way of life. Anyone who has ever gone to sleep and woken up knows the difference between those things. So my fears around story were really just based in the fact that story is a technology that is mostly lorded over us here in the West. And even those who are storytellers often find themselves in marginalized positions and hijacked to tell stories that might not serve the people. And those who do tell stories that serve the people often meet a lot of resistance. So this journey down Storyland began actually not with a children's book or a story like that. It actually began with a helping spirit. It actually began with a helping spirit that this healer brought to me. And this was actually one of my first helping spirits that wasn't a helping spirit that I had heard of before, such as a deity or an angel or something. This was this is someone who lived well, they died well, you don't know them, you're not related to them, but they're saying they're willing to work with you, and you need to work that out. And that was also was very nerve-wracking. And the spirit was a martial artist. He was a man who was a martial artist while he was alive. And the medicine that he was bringing into my life was not actually about story at all. The medicine he was bringing into my life was about discipline. Being a martial artist, a master martial artist when he was alive, he was a master in the art of discipline. And what was needed at this time was for me to discipline my storytelling, for me to discipline the stories I told about myself and about my life and about the world. And if there's anything that I hate, it's discipline. Or at least at the time, if there was anything that I hated, it was really discipline. And he was going to be sort of revving up my discipline engine, because it was vital at this time for me to apply that engine of discipline to my storytelling, because my stories were killing me, frankly. And I'll never forget the journey I took to him, because I was very nervous. By journey, I mean, if you listen to these shows, you know that I do a lot of shamanic journey work. I enter into trance, do visit helping spirits, etc. And I'll never forget the journey to visit him, because I really wasn't used to interacting with a being like this. You know, not a god, not an angel, not one of my ancestors. Just some guy someone referred me to. And I'll never forget meeting him in the spirit world. and him saying to me that he wanted me to get three strands of beads, one strand of green beads, one strand of black beads, and one strand of red beads. And he showed me the beads, and he said, it is vital your stories are organized, because if you don't, and when he said if you don't, he dropped these strands of beads onto the ground, and they all rolled wildly in different directions. And one of the black beads rolled toward a warrior, a red bead rolled toward a woman who was pregnant, and a green bead rolled toward an old man. And he said, if you don't keep your stories organized, the dead will live too long. The woman will give birth too fast, and the warrior will die. And even though I was in a state of despair at that time in my life, and a real lack of clarity about just about everything, I had almost never heard anything so profound spoken directly to my ears that made so much sense, not just for me, but about the world, that I was being told a universal law, something akin to a universal law, that is the power of stories, and that the organization of stories was that vital, and that it would be bad. It would not be, not bad, I hate the word bad, but in some ways, yeah, it would be bad, but it would also be not helpful. It would be unsustainable if the dead lived, you know, if the dead or the dying lived too long, because we have to, you know, let go. We're living in a closed cyclical system. We have to, you know, out with the old and with the new. That's, you know, our culture struggles with that, but we have to get on board. And the, you know, the woman giving birth, or anything being brought to, you know, brought to birth. This strand of red beads representing stories of impetus and fire. The strand of green beads representing stories that of life, and the strand of black beads representing stories that don't serve life and stories of death. And each of these beads rolling toward each of these sort of archetypal figures that he showed me, and said, that's the power of story. That's the power of your stories. What are you going to do? So I did. I literally went out, and I got three strands of beads, one black, one green, one red. And I meditated with them. And I thought about, well, what stories in my life that I'm telling myself are associated with this strand of beads? And what stories can I tell myself that are associated with strength beads? How do I use these stories, stories that fit into each of these three categories, to my advantage and to the advantage of the whole? And I'm still working on my storytelling, for sure. I don't think I will ever stop working on my storytelling. We are a culture in the West of hijacked storytellers. We do not have a good legacy of storytelling for a long time. And I'm really glad I was led to the poem I shared from the book Earth Prayers, because it actually is counter to a fundamental story that we in the West have been told, which is that the earth is not holy, that place is not holy. The title of the show is called On Sacred Ground, and that is counter to a story we are told, not necessarily in books, but it's a story that we're told in media, in church, in the holy places that we go, that it's not about here, it's about some holy other place. Forget here. Here doesn't matter. A fundamental story that's killing us. So stories are medicine for ourselves personally, in our own personal lives, but also the stories that we tell ourselves collectively are also having a gigantic effect on us. And it helps us to recognize them as stories. It helps us to recognize them as stories sometimes rather than beliefs, partly because beliefs are a little bit more rigid, whereas stories are more fluid and the unexpected can happen in them. And it was a fundamental story that had led me to the position that I was in to have to work with this healer and be led to this helping spirit. And that fundamental story, it took me a while to get to it, but I began to realize through me working with this spirit and me asking, well, what are the stories I'm telling myself about my life, that the fundamental story was that I wasn't a part of the story. Was that in the world around me, the world that I live in, the culture that I live in, that there actually was no place for me. And if I wanted to have value and worth, I would have to do a tremendous amount of things just to be a part of the story and to be seen. Which comes down to partly lack of representation. And that's another place where story is huge. There's just this issue, you know, if anyone has been watching the news, there's recently a hashtag called #OscarsSoWhite. And people are lamenting the lack of, specifically, the lack of black actors nominated for an Academy Award. Obviously, because I think there were 20 actors, all of them white, nominated for Academy Awards. There have been many movies with excellent black actors playing black characters over the past year. It's kind of absurd that none of them are being recognized. But for me, it's really important to extend that to people of color in general. Anyone who has ever... I don't even know. I imagine everyone has had some experience where they've watched a movie or watched a play or watched a show and been touched. And been touched because there was this part of them that said, you told my story. Whether it be something traumatic that one experienced or just something unique that one experienced. And if you can recognize that, if you've had that experience, then... which is a very cathartic experience, and it's rather easy to just sort of enlarge in that experience and say, well, what if the whole world experienced that? What if everyone's stories were getting told? And what do we get out of not telling certain people's stories? What do we get out of closing our eyes to certain people's stories? Well, part of that comes down to a story that we have of scarcity. In the West, we are obsessed. We're obsessed with a story of scarcity, that there isn't enough. There isn't enough money. There isn't enough love. There isn't enough anything. And that story of scarcity causes us to say, well, I need to have my rights, but you can't, because if you have rights, then I'll have less rights, which doesn't make any sense. Or if I, you know, if your story gets told, then my story will mean less. And capitalism, as is rather obvious, functions, I mean, it loves scarcity. It requires the idea of, it requires a story of scarcity to work. It requires a story of scarcity when it comes to resources, but it also requires a story of scarcity when it comes to the resource of self-esteem, that you are not enough, and that you must work very, very hard to and buy all of these things to be enough. So the story of scarcity in the West is one of the primary stories underlying our lives. And that story of scarcity is really what's feeding the American political machine right now, as people are lamenting the good old days and saying, make America great again. Which it's frightening that anyone can be okay with that motto, make America great again, because there is no time period in America in which all of the people in America have been okay. Whenever people talk about making America great again, it's like pre-1965, because that means that certain people can't vote. Pre-1925, that means certain people can't vote. You know, 1980s, when the government was injecting crack cocaine in tremendous amounts into black communities to undermine them, when was America great? When has America been great? And the idea is that America, it was great when it supported and unapologetically and unquestioningly centered one specific group of people. So there's a rebellion, new stories, a huge rebellion against new stories and a rebellion against stories being told in new ways. And this isn't, you know, sort of vague hypothesizing. The recent Star Wars movie that came out, a man in Florida committed suicide because the main actor, the main character, was a black male. An adult male in his 50s or 60s committed suicide and left a note to his wife because he was a Star Wars fan and he could not handle that the main actor was black. There's a huge rebellion against new stories as people say, I need to be a part of the story. I'm a part of the story. It's vital to my system, to my self-belief, to my health, to my well-being, to people who look like me, to people who've been through what I've been through, that our stories get told. And this backlash is happening against that story because stories are that powerful. If anyone tells you, guy, I mean, if you see it everywhere, oh God, if you see it everywhere online, every time a movie about Egypt comes out and all of the actors are white, you hear, guys, it's just a movie. Yet people are killing themselves over just movies. People are killing themselves for not seeing themselves in movies. I mean, young gay and trans and, you know, gay, bi, and trans kids have absolutely fallen into despair by not knowing that anyone like them exists, by not seeing themselves, and they have committed suicide for not seeing themselves in stories. We have people committing suicide for seeing others in stories. We have people willing to kill over stories. That is how powerful stories are. And we need to recognize this so that we can take stories back in our own lives, and in the world at large. We need to take stories back and tell new stories. New stories from the stories we were told as children in our personal lives, from our families of origin. New stories that we've been told from the institutions that have given us those stories. One of those stories shows up actually in a recent article in the New Statesman titled, What to Do When You're Not the Hero Anymore, by Lori Penny. And the subtitle is, From Star Wars to Mad Max, A New, More Diverse Kind of Storytelling Went Mainstream This Year, and the Backlash Shows How Much It Matters. It's really good it's a really good read on this topic of stories. And I know that I'm doing some jumping around between how stories relate to the collective and the personal, but they are so related. Because again, my personal story that was affecting my personal life was that I wasn't a part of the larger story. And I had to change that for myself. And I didn't, you know, go make a blockbuster film about myself, but I had to create a story for myself in which I was a part of it. Another article, which might not seem like it's about stories, but it absolutely is, it's in the Philadelphia Tribune by Jesse Holland. The UN panel suggests slavery reparations in the U.S. And there's a panel of non-U.S. nationals who are going around the U.S. and doing a lot of research, a lot of interviews, you know, sort of checking the U.S. on its stuff, which is necessary as the U.S. you know, checks everyone else. And a Filipino researcher on this team named Ricardo A. Zunga III, he said, you know, throughout his moving through the United States and doing this research, what stands out for me is the lack of acknowledgement of the slave trade. And the article goes on to say that, you know, some of the working group's members, none of whom are from the United States, said they were shocked by some of the things they found and were told. And he says, what stands out for me is the lack of acknowledgement of the slave trade. And I just thought that was so interesting because that stands out for a lot of people here in the United States, but we have a story that it's not necessary to talk about it. Even I am a part of that story. It's a story that makes me kind of more lackadaisical about it. Maybe if I was fully aware and fully, you know, sort of seeing the United States from the outside, I'd be in crazy, absurd, you know, raging, not able to function shock myself. But we had a story of denial in the U.S. that we really have a story of denial that causes us to have some things locked in our shadow closet, collective shadow closet, resulting in a lot of the tragedies that we see here. So there's the element of story that we need to be heavy telling, and the stories that we're not telling as well, and how both of those are functioning in our lives. And when I wanted to have this episode, I was thinking very strongly about a writer whose work I really, really love. His name is Charles Eisenstein. I don't know if I've mentioned him on the show before, but again, his name is Charles Eisenstein. And he's the author of the book, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. And a quote from that book is, "It is quite normal to fear what one most desires. We desire to transcend the story of the world that has come to enslave us, that is indeed killing the planet. We fear what the end of that story will bring, the demise of much that is familiar. Fear it or not, it is happening already." There is the element of simply fearing the demise of what which is familiar, even in our own personal lives, even in the stories that we know we can't stop telling ourselves, but they're true. And telling a new story can result in future.
Turn your head away, 'cause what I'm gonna talk about, nobody, nobody, nobody wants to be without. Makes no difference who you are or what color you happen to be, as long gonna have to say my, oh my, oh my. all of the water that's in the sea. Oh, how it flows so very free. Makes no difference who you are or what color you happen to be. I'm talking about freedom. I'm talking about freedom. Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if everybody could feel free. Freedom for you and me. Come on, give me some freedom. I want some freedom. Come on, come on, come on. Give me some freedom, y'all. Give me some freedom.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays feature two wonderful shows to suit your taste. On the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance and tips on the practical use of crystals and crystal balls. His show starts at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and lasts for 1 hour. Next is In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, Kai Armand broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Saturday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shape signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Licking Mojo Curio Company is based in sunny Forestville, California, and provides traditional spiritual products for remediating all kinds of conditions. Locate them online at LuckyMojo.com or visit them in person to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual. We are back on Sacred Ground. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and today we're doing the first episode of at least two that will be focused on the power of story. Stories as medicine, stories as maps, and stories as mirrors. I want to read a quote from Ben Oakley, which reads, "Beware the stories you tell yourself or read subtly at night, beneath the waters of consciousness. They are altering your world." Sometimes before a medicine or modality enters our life, or a helping spirit, we are sort of, we get a hint that something like that's going to show up later. I absolutely explored representation in media for quite a while before story as a healing modality, story as the place I really needed to focus in my own life showed up. And one of the things I came across while I was doing that research in school around story, even though I didn't really know about story to the depth that I've gotten now, is a story that goes around a lot. And the story you hear a lot in folktale as circles, and people who are interested in folktales and mythology and the power of storytelling, being a storyteller, people who want to stand up in front of a group of people and are really, you know, and tell a story, people who are attracted to the role of storytelling in different cultures. That sort of very, I guess, almost like stereotypical cliche role. I'm going to be the storyteller versus all the other ways in which storytelling manifests in our lives, media, etc. So the story is about an anthropologist. And the anthropologist is in a remote village in Africa. I hate that, but that's what the story is. He's in a remote village in Africa, and this remote village in Africa just got a television. And everyone is used to sitting around the old storyteller, around the fire, and because they just got television, they're kind of like, what is this? And everyone leaves the storyteller behind, suspicious of him, and it's all in the living room, you know, or in this hut, now watching television. Their eyes are completely glued to it. And after about a week, they all start, one by one, just sort of walking away and going back to the storyteller by the fire. And the anthropologist goes over to one of the little girls in the village and says, hey, don't your people know that that television has more stories than your old storyteller? And the little girl just sort of waits for a moment, pondering what the man just said, and then said, the television might have more stories than our storyteller, but the storyteller knows me. And when I first heard that story, I was shocked that it was that story was only being used as a metaphor, as a parable in the sort of small world of myth and folkloric storytelling, and that story wasn't that, you know, story about this anthropologist, this little girl, wasn't huge on the map for every kind of storyteller, no matter what their genre was, because it said something so profound about story. That story isn't about the amount of stories or necessarily even how good, you know, necessarily even how good a story is, but that stories are medicine in their reflection of who someone is and what a person is. That television might have more stories than our old storyteller, but the storyteller knows me. He knows what I need. He knows that stories are a sustaining force that are going to support or damage my life. So he knows what story I need. We are living stories. We literally carry stories in our DNA from our ancestors. And I know this because I am clearing stories out of people's ancestral line most days of the week. And then, so I know what a story in an ancestral line knows, looks like, feels like on a very visceral level. And I know what it feels like when that story has been cleared as well. And I also watch in my own life and the lives of those around me, the stories that even first American friends of mine have in their lives that no one taught them, that they couldn't have picked up from some, while they were in high school in Queens. That story that they have in them is because it was passed down energetically from the old world, from first generation Americans. That was passed down from people from before America, and it shows up in their thought patterns and the way they move through the world. It's just a part of them. And then, of course, there are those stories that are not ancestral, per se, but are stories we were told or that we began to tell ourselves as children. And no one told us, this story is killing you. This story is harming you. This is a bad story. If there's anything that we have bad stories about, as we are on the verge of Valentine's Day, we have very bad stories about love. About what love is, where love comes from, how it's supposed to feel, what we have to do to get it. We have so many horrible stories. And those stories come to us from our family of origin experiences and from what we're told about love, from all the stories we see on television and stories we read in books. And we wonder why we have difficulty with love and relationships. And I kind of want to take a moment on this idea of stories about love because it's so fundamental and so vital. It really wasn't until recently that I fully got that stories about love that we hold on to are stories about love, period. Romantic love, platonic love, divine love. These are all interconnected. Sure, they branch off at a certain point, but at their root, there are stories about love. And love being a supporting, originating energy in our lives, or at least it's supposed to. And all of the things I'm beginning to see in my life now and in my practice that flow out of this fundamental story that we have about love. So for instance, if you were brought up with a story that being who is supposed to support you unconditionally only supports you if you do what they see as right in their eyes, then you're going to experience power loss whenever you engage or are interested in or are seeking love. There will be a part of you that says, I need love. Love supports me. Love feeds me. And in order for me to have it, I must change who I am because I do not deserve it. I do not deserve that which sustains. Or if you had the experience that being, and by that being, I'm talking about God, I'm talking about mom, I'm talking about dad, I'm talking about granddad, grandmom, whoever as a child, and of course it could be multiple energies, but whoever as a child you knew, this is where the love comes from. This is where the food comes from. If it came with attachment, then love comes with attachment. And that is a story that, and until you heal that, until you tell a new story in your life, you will experience love coming with disclaimers on it, disclaimers and fine print. And you'll be prepared for that because you knew what you had to do as a child to get that love. So recently I had the experience in my own process of really trying to sort of figure out some issues regarding sustaining energy in my life. I do this radio show, I have a practice, I make some art, and sometimes it feels like the train is on the tracks, And then I'm like, whoa, how'd it get off the tracks? And now this train is just sort of flying through midair. What happened to the ground beneath the train? And as you can imagine, with a runaway train off tracks, it can be kind of hard at that point at which it's off tracks to get it back on track and get it ground again. And I was really recently very committed to never having this happen again, this sort of flying off the tracks, the train of my life, of my duties, of my obligations, responsibilities, etc. So I started journeying to my helping spirits, just, you know, sort of asking different kinds of questions about sustaining energies, thinking about what sustains me, seeing how in my life I would not sustain or support myself in certain ways, waking up and answering emails the first thing in the morning. That's bad. Don't do that. Versus, before I answer emails, I'm going to, you know, make sure that I'm fully sustained, I'm fully nourished. I'm going to meditate and go to the gym and drink water and eat a healthy breakfast, and all of these things I know are me putting back into the pot, me putting into my own pot and having that sustaining energy I need before I go and expend in these different areas, in different places. So I'm having this dual conversation between myself and my own life and with my helping spirits in journey. And as I enter journey, I'm being brought to some really interesting moments from my past that were about what I was sort of just talking about, times where that which was supposed to sustain me betrayed me. Places where the story began, that energies of authority in my life, energies that would sustain and nourish me, came with a price that was simply not worth paying. Well, they were worth paying at the time. I had to survive, but not worth paying long term, especially as an adult. And looking at them, I began to say, wow, I never noticed that I had this pattern with energies in my life, with sustaining energy, that whenever it seems like there's a sustaining energy that comes into my life, there's some really weird caveat that sometimes smells a little bit like slavery on it, or heavy restriction. And I began to sort of see the connection between that here in my life as a almost 30-year-old and my life as an adolescent. So I started asking my helping spirits, well, what do I need to do to transform these energies? And, you know, part of it was, you know, the energies of emotional clearing, which I've mentioned on the show before. Part of it was work of soul retrieval, bringing back some soul parts, pieces of myself that at the time that needed to be told new stories, that needed to feel safe enough to come back with me. That was absolutely a part of it. But the other part of it was actually creating an entirely new relationship with the earth, because my story about the earth had gotten polluted. And my helping spirit had told me some months earlier, you're going to have to, your relationship with the earth is going to have to shift. And I had this resistance that I couldn't understand. And I thought, you know, maybe my resistance to the idea of working with the earth is because that feels too new age to me, or too vague. But it was in this position that I thought, no, my resistance to working with more closely with the earth was because I have a horrible story that's playing out in my life about sustaining energy, that if you're going to sustain me, I know that there's going to be some kind of a price tag that's going to hurt very badly, that you're going to ask me to be something different than I am, and there's going to be a struggle is going to ensue, because that's what I experienced as a kid, that those energies that were supposed to sustain me required that I be something different than I was. So there was a distrust that had developed between me and sustaining energy. and all the sustaining energies that was subconsciously calling into my life were playing out this story with me. And by story, I mean nightmare. I mean, they were playing out this nightmare. So in these scenes that was being shown, they didn't injure me in personal clearing sessions. They didn't end with me bringing back pieces of myself. They ended with me having to dismantle houses. Totally just dismantle, just raise places I had grown up in. This is my spirit saying, the story, you know, you having this place in your subconscious is limiting you. You've got to just destroy it, because this place equals a story, a false story about sustenance in your life and safety in your life. So with my helping spirits and journey, we're raising apartment buildings, raising houses that I had grown up in, completely just dismantling them, bringing them down to the ground. And I'm hearing, you deserved better. This is not a story of love that supports you. And this story that you're holding about these spaces, the stories you receive in these spaces are not stories of love. And if you're going to do what you came here to do, we have to completely raise these stories to the ground. And in each of these scenes, from places I lived in as an adolescent, places that I lived in as a child, I was left with bare earth. And I felt it in my body, this question of, am I even going to trust this? Am I even going to trust this earth? Because the story is so deep-seated and so bad, and I don't even know where to start. And there were times where my helping spirits and I, we just have to go back to source. Just go back to the very beginning, the very origin. What is Earth? What is Earth supposed to be? What is the energy of unconditional support, unconditional love? Deep cleansing of child parts through Earth energy. Deep cleansing of earth energies. Lots of deep renewal. But all of that showing me, even here, 3 years later, the power of story. And foundational stories in our lives. And sure, there's stories we tell ourselves about I'm not good enough, or there's not enough time, or I don't have enough money. But so many of the stories, for those of us who have worked with stories and are interested in changing stories, are not the foundational stories. And It was really a profound experience for me to come across such a foundational story. And I also think it's important to find your foundational stories, because we're often told the foundational story that we're all struggling with is a story about scarcity, which is true. That is very true. Or the foundational story we're all struggling with right now is that you're not sacred and you don't deserve love, which is true. But that I think each of these stories really manifests personally in our lives in a different way. And we've really got to go and ask Spirit, what's a foundational story in my life that isn't serving? Show me that foundational story in my life that's not serving. Versus accepting the story that we're all just struggling with, the same story that's not serving us all. Because that's vague and a lot less actionable than stories that we can trace in our own. Thank you.
exactly where I need to be. I need to be exactly where I am. I am a blessing manifest.
We're back on Sacred Ground, and we're talking about the power of stories. Stories as medicine, as masks, and as mirrors. Because they really do function as all of these. And I'm really excited. There's so many things I haven't been able to address in this episode, but I'm really excited about addressing in the next episode. Because, this is such a vast, vast topic. And in our last section, I was kind of discussing stories that I was holding on to about energies of support in my life and why I, for such a long period of time, struggled with a certain experience of sustainability, a certain experience with authority figures, and it was because, in part, I had a story that was playing out in which, in order to receive support, there was something vital about myself that I had to give up. And this led to a distrust, even of my helping spirit. And that's not good for someone like me who has to work in helping spirits every day. So you can imagine, what these foundational stories are doing in our lives when these, especially foundational stories about support and that which sustains us. And those are directly linked to stories we've been told about God and the divine and our own experiences with family growing up. And some of these stories aren't long-term stories. Some of these stories aren't coming from a place of long-term abuse or long-term alienation or long-term indoctrination. Some of these stories we're holding on to start just in one place, from one single situation. And then the episode, just sharing a story from a client experience I had. And this is a client who came to me trying to figure out why there was such a long streak of bad luck playing out in her life. And as I was doing divination, nothing was really seeming to make sense. And I suggested some sort of talismanic objects. And she said, I really don't want to go that route. You have no idea. I have every kind of power object, talismanic object imaginable. I just don't think that's the answer. And I told her, I journey to see what my spirits would say. As soon as I entered journey, I was brought to a beautiful little girl, no older than 4 years old. And this little girl had the experience of being told that she would be given a gift and then by an adult, and then that adult turning around and saying, now you can't have it because of something about the little girl, something, an action that she took maybe, or some way in which this girl was being told she'd be given a gift and then the gift was flat out denied to her. And, so there's certain things that in journey that you can't put into, that don't happen sequentially, certain things that are just energies. And the energy I got from this scene, it was almost like this little girl was looking out a window with a tear coming down her face as the snow came down. And it was the Christmas that never came. So I bring the soul part back to her, to my client, and it was so interesting because it was in that moment I had heard of and interacted to a certain extent with my divine self. We all have parts of ourselves that are linked to different. Your divine self is that sort of part of you that's most linked to the divine and to sort of your royalty as a human being and your sovereignty. And what you come here to do, and the energy of deserving, sort of the Santa Claus between you and the divine. And Santa Claus never came. And here this little girl was, 4 years later, still staring out the window, waiting for that Christmas that never came, and this little girl being this piece of this woman's divine self that was so vital to her, and that really no talismanic object could replace. It's like your head being cut off. There's nothing that's going to replace that. She needed it back. She needed her crown back. And this had created a story of unworthiness. So throughout her life, she's experiencing a lack of worth and a lack of luck because of that. And it was really interesting because, you know, bring the piece back, it blows my mind because it's a particular kind of energy that I hadn't encountered before. It was a soul part, which I had encountered, but it was a particular kind of soul part that just showed me something about the laws of the universe and the way this whole thing works between us and the divine and stuff. And so here I am, you know, oftentimes I'm more excited than the people I work with for them to do the things that I've sort of encountered. Like, I can bring the puzzle piece back, but I can't do the things that are needed for you to say, integrate this soul part, it's yours. So here I am, really excited about this woman integrating this piece. And she contacts me a couple of months later about some other issues that are going on in her life, and I do some divination, and the cards that are showing up are really weird. They're talking about intuitive little girl. And I'm just like, what's going on here? Is this someone that's, you know, in her apartment building? And I say, whoa, hey, have you integrated that soul part yet? And she sort of says, oh, no. And I say, well, what happened? And she says, well, she really wanted to be pampered. And that was a very practical kind of woman. So, you know, none of that. And it was just like, come on, she wants to be pampered. This is the part of you that is related to the experience of deserving and to the story of deserving. And you're still in a place where you're willing, you know, you're still performing the role that an adult played in this little girl's life, where you are denying her the things that she wants and deserves. And you are now, you have taken on that abuser role of telling her that she does not deserve and is not that which she values. So how can you expect something different from your life? Begin to look at the stories that form the foundation of your life, the stories that we live unconsciously in our everyday interactions, in our everyday thoughts about ourselves, in our interactions with sustaining energies, whether those energies be authority figures, God, a lover we want to have. Beginning to explore those stories and so that we can recognize, oh, I'm in a story. Because that's usually where most of us begin, by recognizing that we are in a particular story and then figuring out, hey, does this story serve me? And if not, what do I need to do to change this story? And gratefully, there are so many modalities that can aid us in changing a story. Obviously, working with the energy of air, which is associated with the mind, and rationalism and speech and the voice is a powerful tool for changing story. But we'll be talking more about tools for changing stories in the next episode. For now, this has been another episode of On Sacred Ground with your host, Kaya Mond. Tune in next week when we continue to talk about stories as medicine, maps, and mirrors. Story this power. Until then, keep a light in your window for courage in our times. I'll be keeping the light.